Kingdom of God. So all scriptures tell us this is man body in which God is manifested, can be manifested. This is held by very good fortune. It is your turn to meet God. So man, but had we known ourselves first, then all these things should have gone, then what would have found that we are of the same essence as that of God. We are drops of the ocean of all consciousness. As such, we are all brothers and sisters in God. So all these atomic powers, this and that thing would have gone to help mankind. All this is due to what? Because we have done little or nothing to know ourselves. And moreover, you'll find after this man body is given to us temporarily, it won't last long. This is the first companion that comes along with us into the world. But when we leave the world, this does not go along with us. So you discover, oh, the one man who rises above body consciousness, his angle of vision is changed. You know, Christ did say, it is easy for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man with so much of possession expended in thought, he cannot, no hope for him. So if your angle of vision is changed, you would have the right perspective of, the right vision of these things. If a man of millions or thousands or hundreds or nothing, they leave everything here. To earn money is not a bad thing, but earn it with honest means. Help yourself and help others. Man is one who is of help to others too. Animals only of help to themselves. Look to the face of the animal, it is like that. Facing earthwards. If it remains all too earthly, no strange. God is man made face upward. So they want, all masters wanted that man should prove the true Son of God. We are all brothers and sisters of God. In that case, in these things the world will have. Kingdom of God will come to our on earth. We are conscious entities. As man, you'll find we are one. Man is born with the same privilege from God. Born the same way, outer construction the same. Two eyes, two hands, two feet, two ears, two nostrils. Inner construction also the same. All have got stomach, lungs, intellect. So as a man, we are one. As soul, we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness. We are all brothers and sisters and are one. As such, we are all brothers and sisters in God. We are already one. And whom we worship, called by so many names, that is also the same. The archers may be many, but the target is the same. You remain in any social body, in any religion, all pray to God. Oh God, although we have not seen, this is the natural instinct within each body, you know, some power is there. So, it is the third aspect about which we know little or nothing. That is why all this happiness is unhappiness due to. Then the master tells us, look here, your conscious entity. You are God in spirit and you are spirit in man. As spirit is eternal, And why you fear that you will die? So the body whom we worship is the same. This is the angle of being changed like that. So as such you will find the world will be all happy. The world is, this is the first self-evident fact we have taken here. Second self-evident fact is the world is not our home, nor this body which we are living in. Our true home is the house of our Father. We are conscious entities. Everything goes to its original source. Light a candle. The flame will go up, even to upward it, even then the flame will go up. But the source of light, sun, is upward. You throw a cloud of earth very high in the heavens, again that will return to earth, because the source is earth below. So our soul is just controlled by these things and identified and being under the control of mind, which is material. We always being led to the earthly things. So they tell us, this man body is not your permanent home, not this world. Your real home is above all heavens. It is that place which is the house of our Father. So naturally, those who come to that awakening, their angle of vision is changed. They consider themselves to be just stuck fast in the earth, whereas the true home is above all heaven. So body is the first companion, as I told you, which came along with us when entering the world, whether king or the subject, rich or the poor, learned or the unlearned, all have to leave the body. In the saints, in the incarnations, they took body and left the scene, and we have also to leave the world someday. So it is a wonderful house we live in. This works, as I submitted already, it works only so long as we are body, and we are in the body so long as some power is controlling us in the body. So this is the high time. Man body is the golden opportunity that we have got. Why? Because in this man body only we can know God, and in no other body. All scriptures speak very highly about it, and they tell us that desire the full body as long as you are in the body. Kabir says, keep the body as long as you can. Rishi told, well, keep it at least up to 100 years. Once this is passes out of our hand, we will go where we are attached. If you are attached to the world, naturally you come round and round to the earth. If, while in man body, we know ourselves and have a contact with all consciousness within, naturally we will go after death to the tomb of the Father. So all scriptures tell us this is man body in which God is manifested, can be manifested. This is had by very good fortune. It is your turn to meet God. So man, the greatness lies in the fact that he know God. He can know God. If he has not known God, why brag so much, I am the head of all creation? So the highest thing that we have to find is to know God. So body is the true temple of God, in which you live in which the light of God is manifest. Outer temples were made out of the man body, bundle of man body. All masters who came, they said, the true mask is the man body. God does not reside in temples made by human hands, but he does live in body, the house which he has built in the womb of the mother. that human body. So outer places of worship, whether they are temples of the Hindus, they are dome-shaped, whether they are mosques, forehead-like shaped, whether they are churches, long nose-shaped, they are the two symbols of God are kept. And God wanted, I one and wish to be many. There was vibration, and vibration results in two things, light and sound. So God is light, and God is nada. God is the music of the spheres. So these outer temples are made just to let the beginners know that such like guide and such like light and such like sound of God, voice of God, is reverberating within your own man body. The body in which you live, that is the true temple of God. Outer temples were only made to let those understand, those are new, what is what. So same light, the same light you have got in the churches, the same light is lit in the temples, the same light is lit in the mosques. So these are only models made, which is the better, best of all. So Master tell us that man body is the best of all in which the light of God is emerging. So I mean the ideal of all religions at our hand is what? A Sikh is he who sees the full effulgent of light within him. He is called a Khalsa. A Hindu is one who, instead of lighting outside, he lights the within, sees the light within. See? A Mohammedan, one who sees the light of God. And a Christian is also one who sees the light of God. Ultimate goal is the same. That school is better in which many students come up successful. Which school is better? Which has got high, very grand buildings, very good playing ground, very good dresses of the students, where no student passes and gets a higher degree. The watch is there, made of gold, studded with rubies. And it does not give time then. So man body, that religion, that school of thought is the best, in which that turns out so many successful students who see the light of God. But who can make us see that light of God? That's the question. Masters always say that light is within you. The body is the temple in which the light of God is effulgent. Why, man, you are going round and round outside. If you want to find him, tap inside. That is what Emerson says. So for that reason, it is the Master's, Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. We are all children of light, enveloped by so many sheets. You know how to take off these sheets, you see the light is already there. So for that reason, that is there, why can't we see? Master said there is light within. The reason is because in contact with mind and matter, soul is going round and round, because wherever it attaches, it will go there. And further, the law of karma, cause and effect, as you sow, so shall you reap, that goes on in operation. If you sow a good seed, you will reap good fruit. If you sow a wrong, bad seed, then the result will be bad. So now the only thing remains, and the mind position, the more you give, the more it wants. The more you enjoy outside, the more mind, more enjoyment. So the precepts tell us what is that, by knowing which, there is nothing more remains to be known. Mind is permanently satisfied. That can be had, that is within us. Master says that we have seen God everywhere. And we also see, I have seen God in this man body too. Why do we not see? They say mind stands in the way. So first thing you see, we have to control the mind. And Master says, you have got a resolute will to meet God, put a step on your mind first, control it. The next step that you will take, that to reach the house of your father. Now how to control the mind? Masters have gone into it, they found that mind is attracted by outside enjoyments, which you go into, you'll find there are two things especially in them. One is good scenery, good beauty, that attracts anybody. Further, outer music. Mind is driven away like that. So God has made that arrangement within us too. And that is more beautiful, more sweet music of the spheres going on. So Master, what do they give? they take this habit of the mind. They give him the more bliss, more joy, more music within us. And they give a demonstration of that. By giving you a demonstration how to withdraw your attention from all outside and withdraw from your body, bring it to the level of the eyes where that single eye is open. If thy single eye be open, single eye will open, your whole body shall be full of light. So light and sound principle is the water of life, bread of life, nectar of life, nectar of Naam, which mind once has a taste, all our outer tastes are forgotten. So for that you see there are two things God has kept in our body. You see light and sound. The two powers there, one of seeing, you got light, all glory and beauty lies within you. Astral plane is more beautiful than the physical one, causal still more. You rise above all these, you have got still more light, good seeing. Similarly, sound principle is within you. So masters, what they do? They give you a demonstration of that within you. If you want a small child, you shut him up in a house, what will he do? He will cry, he will break the doors. If you get something more fascinating, more enchanting within, then he won't like to come out. Now mind does not withdraw from outside for the bliss he has got by outer enjoyment. When he wants this water of life or bread of life is given by his master, the demonstration given at a sitting, then he's got more bliss, more beauty that side, then the mind does not want to come out as well. When you get that bliss, all other outer enjoyments don't attract you. You know, in the life of Lord Krishna, it is said he plunged into the river Jamuna. Underneath he found a hide-headed cobra, hide-headed. So while playing on flute, he controlled the cobra. This is a metaphorical speech. How this mind is the hide-headed snake within you. There are hundreds of ways to keep you away from God and from the truth, from the Master. You can control it only when you come in contact with the light and the music of the spheres within you. So, what it is that brings us into the world again and again? These are the outward enjoyments. So when you get to have this, then naturally you won't come back. You will go where you are, get more bliss and more joy. So now the question is how to come out of this delusion. As I submitted before, our soul is in the control of mind, mind is in the control of the outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are attracted like anything by outward enjoyments. We are identified with the body and outgoing faculties and the outward world so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We cannot discriminate. So masters, what they do? They advise us to come to a master who will give you a demonstration of that. So all masters in East and West express the same thing by giving out the same solution in their own ways. Christ came up. He gave out, except you be reborn, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Nicodemus, who is the Jewish head, great learned man, he came up to Christ and said, we are old men. How can we re-enter the womb of the mother and be reborn? And the Christ told them, well, look here, you are a learned man. You command respect from everybody. Don't you know that flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit? And he said, you must be reborn. To reborn means one birth in this man body, the other into the beyond. So India also, this old rishis had the same thing. You must be twice born. One birth in this bad body and one into the beyond. So this custom was there in the old days. 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old children were made twice born. And they were given Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri Mantra means rise above bodies. Accept the rays of the sun coming to you, rise up into sun and become identified with the sun. O God, direct our attention to that. This is a prayer. So children 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old were made twice born. This Gayatri Mantra was given to them. Along with that, they gave him the demonstration to see the light of God again, sun. Now the same custom prevails amongst Hindu. But for want of practical people, they give the same mantra but no demonstration. Further, you see, all master says, death is awaiting each one of us. There is no escape from death. Whether old or young, or learned or unlearned, that's the door of the death through which each one of us to pass. That narrow the way, straight is the gate, narrow the way, which leadeth to light within you. How to pass through it? This is a practical question. That is to be reborn, to be twice born. Then they say, learn to die so that you may begin to live. As they submitted you to you before, you would like to know God. Just a dying atheist said, yes, God is some power here now. At the time of death, when child read out, God is now here. Or even if you rise above body consciousness, you see that power is controlling us in the body. So, what is the solution of that? To be twice born? To be reborn? To just learn to die so that we may begin to live. This death, Prophet Muhammad also says, Mautu kevalam, kevalantu mautu, die before you are ready to die, when you die. Dadu says the same thing. All of the masters say the same thing. And they ask how the outgoing faculties are inverted. Once somebody questioned Guru Amar Das, how these outgoings are inverted. Can you better sit and see? It is a demonstration to be given how to withdraw from outside. When it is withdrawn, how you find the body, you rise above body consciousness just as one man does at the time of death when he leaves the body. The soul reaches the back of the eyes when the eyes are upturned, and from there leaps into the beyond. So this is while living, that silver cord on which their life is based is not broken. While alive, when that is broken, we are not to return. So that is why the question of Prophet Muhammad is, it is such a death which will lead us to the grave? Said no. It is a death which will lead you from darkness to light. So, it is just a prison house. We are in the prisoners in the prison house of the body. All doors are locked. How to go up? So, Maulana Rum says, well, make a hole in the roof and go out. There are ways of expressing the same thing. Those who are initiated into the mysteries of the beyond, they have the same experience as one has at the time of death of leaving the body. So for that, naturally, one has to pray, O God, send us such like men who can take us out of the man box of the man body. Swamiji also said, no other man would be able to take you out of the box of the man body except the master. So death awaits each of us, and there is no escape from here. Then what is how to conquer death is to learn to die so that begin to live. Once you know how to rise above body consciousness, death becomes a child. Saint Paul said, I die daily. This is dying daily. Take cross daily. This is what is taking cross daily. So you'll find kingdom of God cannot be had by observation, it is within you. God realization then comes not possible without a God-man. Why can't we do ourselves? As I committed, we are identified with the man body, outgoing faculties and the world, that we cannot differentiate ourselves. And we have recourse to the methods and practices which is related to the outgoing faculties, body and intellect. Those who are already identified with these, how can they rise above body consciousness by performing those very practices which relate to them? So it is a matter of someone who can drag you out of the box of the man body. So they pray for that. So God is within us. There are 10 doors in the body. 9 are apparent. 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 2 ears, about 2 underneath. And there's a 10th door which opens into the beyond, which lies at the back of the eyes. So this soul under orders, command of the mind, which is going out through the 9 doors. So 9 doors are the doors of senses. You see? So unless we withdraw from the 9 doors, come to the seat of the soul, which is the 10th door in the body, from where man can go into the beyond too. So we need somebody to help us. We cannot ourselves do, because I've just submitted. We are already identified with these things. So masters, what they do the very first day, give you a demonstration how to rise above body consciousness. And the man sees himself, I'm risen, he sees inner eyes open, sees the light of God, he bears testimony to it. So that is why Master said, don't believe in the word of Master unless you see for your own self what he says, maybe little or more. So many have gone that way, but they have not found the way which leads to life. They close their eyes nowhere because they are still in the body. They may visualize anything, premeditate anything that won't take you anything into the beyond. So we need a teacher at every stage of life. As a child, we need parents, brothers and sisters. In the schools, we need teachers. In all outward subjects which relate to the outgoing faculty, mind or intellect, we need somebody's guidance who is that way. Now this is a subject where all world philosophy, then their religion starts. Religion means re, means back, leads you to mind. Nobody is needed there. If you can rise above yourself, when it's good, what more is wanted? If not, why not pray, O God? In the text you see there's a prayer, O God, give the contact of such a person who is in tune with you. At night while going before sleep, he says, O God, meet us the masters who may give us a contact with you. So man, masters are the link between man and God. So the 9 doors where we are, they lead to senses, and the 10th door into the beyond. For that reason, you see, those who have met the masters, they solve the mystery of life themselves. When they left the scene, the master left the world. To keep their teachings alive, the school of thought, or the so-called social bodies, came into being. So that, if no, with a noble purpose it was, so that many people may derive benefit from the man body. So as long as they are practical people, people derive the benefit. For want of practical people, the same formation results in stagnation, and stagnation results in deterioration. And as the master again come up, well, you are going amiss. So man made religions for the best use of them, to make the best use of them. These men were not made for religions, but religions were made for man to make the best use of them. So God is all joy, all happiness, all wisdom. Our soul is of the same essence as that of God. We are also, you see, have wisdom. The wisdom lies in what? In man body only can we know, God. Have you done anything to do that? If we have not done things, you see, we must have taken from foresight, because after all we have to leave body someday. No exception to do. What have we done so far? Are we going on with the eyes closed? A pigeon sees, a cat comes. If he closes his eyes, will he not come in his attack? Cat will eat him up. So this is most personal thing, most important, which concerns our very self and about which we have what we have done.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. This morning our reader is Barbara Ann Grimes. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Okay, carry on.
Continuing on with Master Kripal Singh's biography of Baba Jaimal Singh, we're in part 3 now in the section called Faith, Love, and Self-Surrender. It was indeed a supreme blessing to find a true Satguru. If the search for a competent master needed great perseverance and discrimination on the part of the seeker, the qualities most demanded of him after the quest had been crowned were faith, love, and complete self-surrender. It was not until King Janak had renounced body, mind, and wealth that he received enlightenment. To meet a true master was to realize one's own limitations and one's blessedness in being accepted at his feet. It was also to know that his love and his wisdom were measureless and infinite. Such a realization must, if one wished to make the most of one's opportunity, be accompanied by humility and faith and the acceptance of his will as supreme. Babaji in his discourses had no less in his letters time and again asserted the necessity of love and faith on the part of the disciple. Writing to Baba Sawan Singh on the 16th of May, 1901, he said, "Shabd is the real form of the Satguru. By linking with it, you will reach your destination. But the condition is that you first develop love and devotion for the person of the master, for without it, nothing else is possible. The Satguru is one with the All-Giver, the Animiradaswami, and has assumed a physical form for the uplift of jivas. Whosoever develops a strong love and devotion for him and regards him as the Supreme Lord himself will contact the Shabd Dun and be saved." On another occasion, he wrote, "Even after 100 years of bhajan, one does not get so purified as by an intense longing for darshan, that is, meeting with the master, provided that the longing is real and true and the love for the Satguru is from the innermost heart." Self-surrender was the natural corollary of such faith and love, and Babaji's letters return insistently to this theme. From May 24, 1901, he wrote, "Be not lost in yourself. Let this thought be firmly and unshakably fixed in your mind, body, mind, and wealth, Nirat and Surat, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, hands, feet, yea, all that is in the world is the Satguru's. I myself am nothing. Whatever you are doing, do it as Satguru's, and always seek to do what is the best. Do not forget this, even for a moment, but take it as a commandment. Never let the idea of mindness find a place in your heart. Even if you get the lordship of Brahman, do not regard that you have any share in it. I am only an agent. Everything is a Satguru's. Let the master's injunction be ever in your mind. I am nothing. I am nothing. I am nothing. And let the remembrance of the Lord be your constant thought and the form of the Satguru imaged in your heart always." That was from a letter of September 7th, 1900. "Weed out all worldly desires from your heart and place them at your master's feet. Claim nothing for yourself and try to tune yourself to his will, which should be uppermost in your heart. Even if he asks you to dig grass, do it, for to obey the Satguru is the highest action. If you can cast your heart in this mold, then all things will be added unto you." That was a letter from September 18th, 1902. When Baba Sawan Singh Ji once wrote that he did not even yearn for Sach Khand, but only prayed that he had love and faith at the Satguru's holy feet, Babaji was extremely pleased and replied that such self-surrender was indeed the highest discipline, and assured him that he who had such a love for the master would certainly reach Sach Khand, and passing through the Alak Agam Animaradaswami, get merged in the Wonder Region. That was from September 11, 1897. The Life Without. The seeker who had found a true guide and who had begun to develop the right kind of love and faith in him would naturally attempt to fashion his life according to his Satguru's will, and Babaji laid great emphasis on the need to transform our lives. It was not necessary, he maintained, to leave the world in order to pursue the inner path. What was needed for spiritual progress was inner detachment, and he who had surrendered himself completely to his guru was free from all earthly ties. Some of his disciples would at times express the desire for complete renunciation, but he always kept such tendencies in check, and he wrote, "You say you wish to give up home and service and devote yourself exclusively to bhajan. Home or service or wealth, are they really yours? Turn it over in your mind. It is all a magician's game, and the world is a dream. Then why worry about clutching and relinquishing?" And that was written on September 8, 1902. The ideal he always held up before his disciples was that of the royal swan that had its home in the water, yet rose up from it dry and untrammeled. If he would not have his disciples attached to the world, he would not have them neglect their worldly duties either. When Baba Sawan Singh wrote that he would be taking 10 days leave and spending it at Bayas, Babaji replied, "When you come on 10 days leave, you should first proceed straight home. Then, on your way back, drop in Saturday at about 5 p.m. at the Dera, from where you can proceed to duty the following day after attending the Sunday satsang. You must go home, for there are many things awaiting your attention there for the last 2 or 3 years. Therefore, please go straight home. I will be very pleased if you first go home and then come here." When on one occasion his beloved disciple was unable to secure leave for seeing him and offered to come over nonetheless, Babaji was far from happy and strictly forbade any such step. "Please, never write such a thing again," he answered, "that you would come here without taking leave," and added, "The work that you are doing, that is also the work of Radhaswami, the work of the Lord." However, when living in the world, one had to follow a very rigorous discipline. The road to the New Jerusalem was a narrow and difficult one. "Your way of living," said the sage of Bayas to his disciples, "must be different from that of other people." And how exacting was the discipline, he demanded, comes clear in one of his letters. "You do not seem to understand that when your official duties are over, you are not to talk to anyone. In the evening, between 6 and 8, you should sit for bhajan as long as possible, be it half an hour, 15 minutes, an hour and a half, and keep the surat on the inner planes. Then hold satsang from 8 to 10 p.m., after which you may go to sleep or talk as you please. Then at 4:30 in the morning, you are to sit for bhajan and continue up to 5:30. Then throughout the day, you have to attend to your official routine and may, if you like, talk during those hours. But as soon as you are free from office duties, you must not waste time in idle talk or in the company of non-satsangis. You should have your meals in private. You are never to have meals cooked from non-satsangis in your kitchen, especially if they take meat and drink. If you associate with non-satsangis, you will have to suffer from the effects of their company. That was October 17, 1902. Abstinence from non-vegetarian food and intoxicants was a prime condition for taking to the spiritual path. Babaji laid equal stress on the need for honesty. In the same letter we've quoted above, he wrote, "If you are offered anything free, never accept it, for how will you repay it? If you do not adhere strictly to this rule, you will never attain the highest spiritually. One must not be led away by the world, but look upon each object with discrimination." Quote, "The entire world is tied with the ropes of love of parents, children, wife, and earthly relations," end quote. "And one must free oneself from this slavery. Running away to the jungles was no solution. It had to be an inner detachment, and this inner detachment could only come through the love of a true master. Hence the great value of satsang, for it was only through association with him that one imbibed the true values of life and learned of the delusions of Maya and imbibed a love that displaced the love of the world. Peace and blessing radiate from the person of a saint, and whoever came in contact and whoever came under his spell was freed from worldly tensions, ambitions, and jealousies. He saw all creatures as of his own essence and knew all worldly gain to be a passing shadow. Such a man alone could cut through the meshes of Maya and reach out toward the world beyond, the life within. The perfection of outer conduct was essential, as it was only an indispensable means for reaching the inner goal. Love and faith for the Satguru, self-surrender, and the ethically unimpeachable life all converged on this center. Man's ultimate goal was at one with the Absolute, and if this was not achieved, the rest was of not much benefit. It was this question of actual spiritual ascension that was Babaji's main concern as a teacher. He did not expend much time on matters of theory. "Why dispute? Why argue?" he would say. "Turn within, go inside, and see for yourself." His correspondence with Baba Sawan Singh is one long exhortation to leave the outside world and to retreat to the world within, and each of his letters has something valuable to say on the actual practice of spirituality. Since the soul had fallen a victim to Maya through the mind and the senses, the way of liberation for it lay through its withdrawal from them. The two sadhanas that Babaji gave for practice, as his predecessors had done, were Simran and Bhajan. The first, involving the repetition of the sacred names of the Lord, was to be practiced at all hours of the day. "Always keep the Simran in mind," he enjoined, "even while moving or busy at work. Constant thought of the Supreme One was the greatest security against worldly thoughts and desires. It helped the mind in keeping itself free from its usual preoccupations, and when done with full attention at the time of abhyasa or meditation, it enabled a speedy collection of the currents of consciousness at the spiritual center between and behind the eyebrows. One such concentration or dhyan had been attained, one could get in touch with the sound current, and dhyan resulting from Simran led naturally to bhajan, or absorption into the Shabd Dhun. When you are doing your bhajan or simran, he wrote, do not have any worldly cares in your mind, nor let yourself be distracted by any thoughts. First, do your simran for a quarter of an hour, then gradually fix your attention in the music of the Shabd Dhun, then give up simran and anchor your mind and soul in the Shabd. You will then experience great bliss, and supreme grace will descend on you from the highest region. Such was the general pattern. The details, of course, were adjustable. The time factor could vary, but daily abhyasas were to be maintained at all cost. Listen to the Shabd Dhun calling in your heart every day with great love and devotion for 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes or an hour or two, according to the time at your disposal. But you must listen to it every day for a while. Footnote. Hazar Baba Sawan Singh Ji also laid great stress on this, quote, no matter in what circumstances one finds himself and what new problems one is facing, a devotee should not miss his bhajan. He may only give it 15 minutes or even 5 minutes to it daily, but he should be on it without a break. That is from Spiritual Gems. There was great beauty in the Shabd. It had a music that was beyond any music created by man and which drew the soul toward itself. It was forever calling the spirit toward its divine home, and though it was not heard by ordinary men, yet those who had developed through Abhyasa and the grace of a Satguru the capacity of inner hearing could hear its melody every minute of the day, now growing stronger as the mind focused itself at one point, now dimming and fading away as one's thoughts scattered in various directions and attention was dissipated. It was Shabd that was the true anchor of the seeker. It was the conscious power that had brought everything into creation, and it was also one's real master, the Shabd Guru, for the Satguru in his human form was its physical manifestation. Babaji once said, Shabd Dhun, that is our real form. This physical body is only a garment. Nobody could keep it forever, and nobody ever will. Believe, O devout ones, that the Shabd form of the Satguru, which has no beginning and no end, is within the body. Once one had developed a constant link with this inner music, it worked as a shield against worldly afflictions and sorrows. Misfortunes visited everyone, and one's past karmas had to be paid for. But for the man who had rooted himself in the Shabd Dhun, they had lost their sting. Babaji, speaking mostly to simple villagers, drove home his teachings through examples and similes based on the vigil for village life. Thus explaining the protective power of Shabd, he would say, the body's like a village or city, and the Shabd Dhun is our true own house. When somebody dies or there's some great suffering in another house, everyone in that house is very unhappy, but we in our own house are quite contented. Again, clarifying the magnetic power and the hold of the inner music, on another occasion he wrote, the Shabd Dhun will pull it, the mind, and keep it in the same way as animals like goats or cattle are kept tied by means of a rope. The greatest obstacles to the seeker were the mind and the senses. It was through their agency that the soul had been caught in the nets of Maya, and the soul had to disengage itself from them in order to be free. Shutting out the sense experience was not so difficult. Even when the gates of the senses had been shut, the mind continued to disturb and distract. It was the root of the ego principle, and therefore the chief cause of the jiva's isolation from the universal Lord. How was this restless dragon to be conquered? Babaji maintained that the chief remedy lay in meditation on the form of the true master and absorption in Shabd. He wrote on January 7, 1901, "You ask me how to hold your mind. It is held only through Shabd. Hear its music daily and meditate on the form of Satguru. Then the mind shall cease to wander, and one day, born on the Shabdun, the soul shall reach Dasam Dwar, the third inner plane and home of the universal mind. Thus, leaving the mental apparatus behind, the soul shall unite with the pure Shabd, and through the grace of the Satguru, reach Satchkhand. Have no doubt, it shall reach there." Once the mind had been brought under control, and it no longer doubted and wavered, he wrote, "then the radiant form of the Master appears within. There's no difference between it and the physical form. It's like a reflection in a clear mirror. So long as the glass is not clear, nothing can be reflected." The mind was indeed a glass, which when sullied by the muck flow of worldly attachments, blurred and hid everything. But the moment this film was cleansed, it imaged the universal in itself. The surat collected by Simran at the Tisrat Til shot through it with the aid of the magnetism of Shabd. As it entered the inner realms, it was met by the radiant form of the Master that welcomed it and thenceforward guided every step of its inner journey. Once the soul had won access to the Master in his radiant form within, its major task was over. The rest was a matter of time. It could, of course, be taken directly to higher planes by the Satguru, but he worked out the progress gradually, for else, as was the case with an insistent pundit, the shock and strain of it would be too great. The Sanchit karmas, that is, actions of past lives to fructify in future births, and the Kriyaman karmas, actions in this life also to fructify in future ones, had, of course, been rendered ineffective the moment the Master had accepted one in his fold. But the Prarabdha karmas, on which the present life was based, had to be worked out, else death would immediately ensue. The Master sought to exhaust these as swiftly and as smoothly as possible. When Baba Sawan Singh Ji's leg was fractured, Babaji revealed that it was the result of no mere accident, but of past karmas whose fruit could not be avoided. But his suffering, if not wholly cancelled, had been mitigated through his Satguru's intercession. "Whatever suffering has come to you," Babaji wrote, "is only a fifth part. Four parts have been condoned." And he went on to add, "Suffering and troubles are blessings in disguise, for they are ordained by the Lord. If our benefit lies in pain, he sends pain. If in pleasure, he sends pleasure. Pleasures and pains are tests of our strength. And if one does not waver or deflect, then the Almighty blesses such souls with Nam, and that was written May 8, 1897. And I shall stop the reading here.
Thank you, Barbara, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today we had 68 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.